I think when you lay out where your out of bounds is, you know, I've told them laziness and unprofessionalism is on the outside. Everything else is, if it's in good faith and pursuit of justice, you know, legal, righteous, we're going to be okay. Like, we're going to work through those problems. You're not going to get blasted for making mistakes like that. That's silly. And then, you know, you hold to that, you're okay. I think further, you know, working as hard or harder than your folks. And that doesn't mean like hours. You know, I'm a big believer, like, we're not paying you for the quantity of your work. We pay folks for the quality of your work. So yeah, I'm going to be here early. I'm going to be in the gym. I'm going to be on some calls with you. I'm going to be in your lineups. You know, I'm going to work. I'm going to put as much effort in as you do, at least.
Hey guys, if you missed out on the last conference in Nashville, Tennessee, you don't want to miss out on the next one. It's April 28th through May 3rd, Orlando, Florida, the Gaylord Palms Resort and Convention Center. You made a mistake missing the last one. You don't want that to happen again on this one. 5 days of some of the best training you're ever going to experience packed into one event. We have an early bird special right now, $50 off. Use 24 early bird on our website, streetcop.com. Look for the conference, click the link, register today. If you want to get significantly better at this profession in 5 days, don't dare miss out on the 2024 Street Cop Conference. 111-110.
Be a street cop.
New office, Corey?
Yeah, it's gigantic, man. I mean, I moved from headquarters to one of our substations, so yeah, it's a fairly new building, new gym. We got it's one of our new, I think it is our newest substation. We've got four substations and then the training academy. So yeah, it's great, man. It's humongous. It's too much room. You can play cornhole in this office, which is nuts. But yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's good. It's good.
So, but maybe pull back some of the curtains and some of the things that you said to the rank and file that you're supervising now. Like, what were some of the things that you told them? What would fly, what wouldn't fly?
Yeah. So, you know, I told them, first of all, look, none of y'all, any four of y'all together, have not been written up more than I have. You've not been disciplined more than I have. You haven't destroyed more property than I have. You haven't, you know, been in more trouble than I have, period. So start there. So first of all, relax. Okay. Most importantly, I told them, look, I want y'all all to be problem solvers. Like, I want to build a division of problem solvers. When I met with the sergeants and the corporals in the first staff meeting, I told them, look, stop answering their questions. I want them to embrace their problems, these complex problems on the street, and I want them to solve their problems. I told the bosses, look, when your officers, if they have to call you, I just want you to say, I want you, if they have to run it past you, I want you to say, what's your recommendation? And then if it's legal, ethical, moral, I want you to say, go forth, like, do it, green light. I want you to be on green light. So I've told the, when I met with the officers, I told them, look, stop calling your bosses. First of all, stop calling your bosses. You are the expert on your problem. You're a professional. You've been doing this for a year, 5 years, whatever. You've got a lot of experience. You probably know the right thing to do. Just do it, right? The second big thing I told them, look, a lot of these inner squad squabbles, personality conflicts, nonsense, stop bringing that to your bosses. Handle it on the squad level. Take your friends out behind the proverbial woodshed and y'all work it out. Stop bringing these personality conflicts to your supervisor, to referee. That's nuts. That's crazy. Cause that was, you know, that takes up a lot of time. It takes up a lot of energy. It's way more healthy if the, you know, if the peer to peer just says, look, we have a problem. Let's go work it out. Let's have a cup of coffee. Let's whatever, let's fight. I don't care what you do, but solve it on the peer level. You know, that just is most healthy. And then the final thing is I told them, look, anything, if a innovative, you know, aggressive, like, mistake comes before my eyes or definitely over my desk, where you've tried something that was aggressive and assertive and innovative, and it just didn't work out, I'm gonna have like total grace. I mean, honestly, like complete grace. Like, that's fine. I want to see more of that. I'm gonna say, hey, it's no big deal. Stuff doesn't work out. Go make another, you know, innovative error. I told them, and I've highlighted this extremely, the only thing you're gonna have a severe problem with me over is laziness and unprofessionalism, period. If something comes through here that's where it's, you know, a laziness issue, an unprofessionalism, you know, issue, which is not necessarily like cursing somebody, it's just being unprofessional, right? We have, you think about professionals, you think doctors, lawyers, that kind of thing. Like, we're professionals, so we should be held to, we should hold ourselves to that professional standard. So, you know, if a complaint comes through here where you've been lazy and made an error, or you've been unprofessional, and a lot of times those two things come together, it's not going to be pleasant in here. Just be very clear about that. Because I've told them, like, I don't think policing is necessarily a hard job. I think it's a fun job. It's why most people want to do this or have a fantasy of doing this job anyway. So the idea that you would kind of half-ass things, that's not gonna fly. Like, and I don't have, I don't entertain like laziness at all. I think I have like a physical allergy to laziness. Like, I think it actually physically affects me when I see it at my house, on a church softball team, a police squad, I don't care where it is. Anytime I see laziness, I kind of start losing it. So I've told them, we're not doing that. You know, you work 4 days on, 4 days off, you work half the year, like, we're not going to be lazy while we're here. And so I think that's stuck, and honestly, like, if you're put off by that, by that ask, then it's probably not the place you want to work anyway. And that's okay too. So yeah, I think it's been accepted, man. It's been I'm learning a lot, making some changes, and mostly just unleashing these young folks to go forth and make mistakes. And that's okay. But I've told them, like, the priorities here are honesty, in everything, meaning even if something is hard to say, like a hard discussion, have it anyway. And then secondarily is like customer focus. I mean, we're our job is to serve the citizens, right? We lose that focus a lot. And then finally is, what a novel idea, but like, make this a fun place to be. Like, be a likable person. How about that? And if you're not a likable person, how about this? Impersonate a likable person. And pretty soon, shockingly enough, you may actually become a likable person. And this should be a fun place to be. I've told them, like, my fantasy is this: after 3 to 4 months, I want all of our problems, like all of our drama and challenges, to be outside of this building, right? Crime, traffic, nonsense, shootings, gangs. I don't want any problems in here. I don't want any like personality, passive aggressive, built up nonsense in this house. Like, that's a good goal. I don't know that you ever get there with, 70 or 80 folks, but I think you can move in that direction. So I've told them that's my fantasy. That's the fantasy I can talk about, among them. So that's where we want to be going.
Did you leave the conversation open to them firing some questions back at you?
Yeah, yeah.
And how'd that go? What were some of the kind of questions or concerns they had? Yeah. What are they looking forward to? Were there any disagreements with some things? I'm curious.
Yeah, I'll tell you, like, overall, nobody was courageous enough to say, like, I'm lazy, and so this is going to be a problem. Because you can say that, right? And so nobody's going to disagree with that. And further, telling these folks, to like, the whole message was giving them ownership and giving them permission to like get after it and make decisions for themselves. And you don't have to ask for, direction, like, it was pretty much overwhelmingly accepted. I mean, these folks, I saw like a look of, I won't say like reinvigoration in a lot of these officers' eyes, but I don't know that they've been told that you can mess up. Right. I told several of the squads, look, How often, I quizzed him, I said, look, how often do you feel like as a cop you have to be right? Like, you have to be correct. And give me a percentage. And the guy, some of the guys, well, 100%. And I'm like, God, really? You have to be right 100% of the time. Oh, maybe not 100, 90. How about, 70, 75, 78. And I told him, I said, look, honestly, in policing, because it's humans dealing with humans, you actually have to be right 0% of the time. But you have to be reasonable 100% of the time, right? Everything we do has to be reasonable. That's why we go back to that professionalism bend. And you're going to be right. The more you do that, you're going to be, just by side effect, you're going to be right more than you're not. But you don't have to be. Like, that's not what we're held to. We're not held to perfection, but we're held to reasonableness. And, so when I've told them these things, I've been sincere, because I've told them, look, I've made more mistakes than y'all, honestly, both like good faith errors and just, pig-headed errors. I've done some silly things, and we can argue over who's, been in IA more likely. I'll probably win that conversation, but, make good faith errors. And so it's been interesting. And then I've asked, I keep asking them, give me problems to solve. Give me some problems I could solve. What do you need? Stuff, is the building too hot? You need a piece of gear in the gym. Like, what do you need? And so I'm hearing some of those things, and we're fixing some of those problems. Cause a lot of times, like, the small things are the big things, You know, it's hot in the gym in the summer. And, you know, the air doesn't circulate. So we need some like nice fans. So I just bought some fans and now it's beautiful in the gym. That's great. So stuff like that, I try
that's
to ask and like, give me some problems to solve. So, yeah.
What other things do they want as far as the small things? Is there anything else like, you know, this, people don't realize some of the best stuff you can do for morale boosters are so simple. And so people don't essentially need a, MRAP
right.
to like build morale.
Right.
Something like, hey, boss, we're sick of wearing these friggin' baseball caps. They hurt our heads.
Yep.
Can we look at a new design? You know, we hate these things, right? Like, hey, in the winter, instead of wearing the big Russian babushka looking things, we'd like to wear skull caps.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. One of the, I mean, that you hit on one here, like, you know, for the last couple months or so, so many of our young officers, we've had this policy for years where we couldn't wear a hat, like a ball cap. And everybody wants them because you're in the South, it's hot, you know, sun's bearing down on you. And that was just a big ask. And recently we just said, yeah, we're going to change the directive, authorize ball caps and issue a ball cap. And man, like that has been a big, big deal for a lot of officers. It's just, it's more comfortable. They feel like, you know, they're in the summertime, their hair can be a little disheveled. They can wear that hat and look more professional. One thing that as soon as I came in, I just designed a simple patch, a unit patch for the district. And bought a bunch of them with Velcro that you can put on your inner vests, you know, and to build like that team cohesion, you know, because everybody wants to be, you know, it's the reason that sports teams have, you know, they spend a lot of marketing money and time and thought on building a proper brand is everybody likes to be part of something that's identifiable, right? So when my folks go to the range and qualify with officers from other districts, I want them to see those unit patches and recognize like, oh, what's that about? Like, well, that's our district. That's district two. Like that's where you want to be. Right. That's where they're doing, you know, epic police work, the kind of stuff they make movies about. So, you know, starting that brand where the folks can buy into it. And it just gives a sense of like, I don't know, it's not a word, but like we ship, right. Where this is our thing, right. We've got a team here. We're proud of it. We're going to uphold it. We're going to have high standards. We're going to build a culture. We're not going to tolerate laziness or unprofessionalism. Like, shockingly enough, folks want that. The right folks want that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Nobody wants to work with a lazy person or a bum. Nobody wants to work with a bum.
No, but that stuff's contagious. I mean, you know, if you don't dig it out like a cancer, it's contagious. And you have to address, you know, some things like laziness, negativity, whining, that kind of thing. Like sometimes you need to be severe with those people. I mean, honestly, like have a challenging conversation or, you know, with the severe, you have to be severe sometimes. You have to dig that stuff out. So yeah, we're trying to just build a new culture here. And like I said, I tend to think it's a good thing. But it's fun to watch for sure. I like seeing the young officers that have never been given that kind of license and like to watch them, you know, with the realization, look, the boss trusts me to go out there and make my own decisions. Cause I've told them, look, the sergeants, their job is to build folks who will replace them. And my lieutenant's job for her is to build folks that will replace her. Then same for me. Like I want her to replace me. So we're constantly like building problem solvers and building leaders to make ourselves, you know, replaceable. And so that's the goal, man. You know, it's nothing, you know, that's my master's degree. That's all I got. That's, you know, that's all else I bring.
What's the availability for you for them? So if they want to grab your ear for a few minutes, do you have like an open door policy? How does that work?
So I've told all of them the door other than right now, because I'm recording this, the door is physically and metaphorically always open, period. Further, I kind of make it a standing rule. If I can take a phone call on speakerphone, I do it. I like the idea of like open communication, folks hearing what's going on in there. I've told them, you know, I don't want anybody stepping out of bounds of the chain of command. You know, I don't want anybody like, you know, like a kid will go and ask their mom to do a sleepover and she says no. So they go to their dad, like none of that. We're not doing that. But, you know, you want to come in here. I got a table and chairs. Like we can talk about anything. And I've told the bosses, like, don't be intimidated by that. If your folks want to come in here and talk about whatever, I'm always available. So I go to a lot of the lineups. I'm out running around, running calls with the folks. And I started, I don't think it's ever a bad plan to over communicate with your folks. I think if anything, like too little communication is not a good thing. So I send out a lot of division wide emails. I built one of the first things I did was built a group Outlook list of all of my 75 folks or whatever. And I send them, I'm sending them things that I'm reading for their digestion, you know, things of, you know, a vision we want to push. So everybody is receiving the same communication. And so, yeah, I think being as available as possible, it just makes sense. You know, and then just being a force multiplier. I mean, I've believed in this since I was a sergeant. You know, a sergeant, lieutenant, captain, whatever. Yeah, you're in charge and you're casting a vision, but you should be a force multiplier also. So if you can be running around out here and, you know, helping out with morale, shagging a couple calls, like why would you not do that? Like there's no, I can't think of a reason why you wouldn't do something like that. So I think that, you know, I think that makes sense. I run around at night some and, you know, start mix it up with the folks. So you don't ever want to forget, man, you're a part of the team. That's important.
It's frustrating for me, and I'm curious if you have any thoughts on this. I'm sure you do. That I have seen for the 22 plus years I've been in this business, you'll have a top level supervisor who knows that they have a problematic mid-level supervisor, and they'll do nothing about it. Yeah. And that frustrates the shit out of the rank and file. Now, people have to understand that as you move through the rank and file, even in an organization outside of police work, you get to have all the fucking good shit, but you also get more of the bad shit to deal with.
For sure.
So with that being said, let's say today four or five of the guys walk into your office and go, hey, Cap, can we bend your ear for a second? And go, yeah, listen, this sergeant, we ain't trying to go over his head. Yeah. You got to look into this guy. He is literally killing us out here.
Yeah.
What do you do in a scenario like that?
Yeah. So first of all, in my opinion, like hearing that sounds dysfunctional, because if you as the boss are having to hear about a problem that bad from other folks and you're not aware of it yourself, that's not healthy. Chances are coming in, you already know some problems that you're going to have to address. Like you should, if you're dialed in at all. I mean, in our, this is a big agency. We've got 700 cops, but coming into a division, I can look at a roster and be like, yep, this is going to be a challenge. These guys are ballers, professionals. This person is going to need some attention. So you probably know that stuff in advance. Like everything that you and I have ever talked about here, the whole disconnect comes in execution. That's it. Everybody knows the right thing to do. Like we've told you, you know, me and you have talked about, you can pick the top 50 Amazon leadership books and they're all going to tell you, it's all the same information. Where I think like effective leaders like go forward is they actually execute and do the hard thing. So I think I'm going to speak fairly hypothetically because I've had some of these conversations, but I don't want to trespass on anybody's business and put anybody's business out in the street. But I've had some conversations already here where, I've called folks in and had direct conversations basically saying, look, this is the perception of the mass, you know, majority of folks of you and how you're whatever doing this, running your squad, handling this kind of business. And it's not going to fit with this vision. It's not going to fit with the new vision. You've heard the new vision. I've cast it to you. I've been extremely blatant about it. It's not unclear at all. No laziness, no unprofessionalism, problem solvers, ownership, responsibility. You know, you as a boss should be working harder than your folks. Therefore, you never have to motivate them. If a boss is working harder than their folks are going to follow them. They're going to be, you know, absolute pros. And so just laying out very clearly, like, you know, where you're at doesn't fit. It's not going to fit. So the options are these: change, right? Which I'll help you do. Surely I would prefer you to stay, or leave. I'll also help. And that's okay too, right? Not everybody is the same. Not everybody's culture is going to fit with everybody. I completely understand that, but I don't want to be unclear. I think a lot of times we get in trouble because we're not clear. You know, we see an underperformer or, you know, a negative contagion, something like that. And we call them in and we say, look, you gotta knock that off. And you're going to be able to knock that off. Yeah. I'll knock that. Right. And then you get, it's nothing's cemented. You know, I would prefer to say it's not working. You're not currently, this is not a fit. It doesn't fit the culture. Your options are these. change, modify how you're running things, how you're leading, or go somewhere else, and I'll help. Either way, your decision. I'm totally fine. I would prefer to you to stay, but you know, the priority is the health of this team, of this district, and it can't be otherwise. So you know, you lay it out like that, I think most folks kind of, even the underperformers or the, you know, negative contagions, I feel like they, when they're encountered with that kind of truth, I think they understand it, even if it's hard to hear. You know, that stuff's hard to digest. But when somebody's saying, look, the captain's priority necessarily is the health of the whole district, and if you're in the way of that, then you have to be removed or change. I think that's fair. I think that's the kind of things that don't get said enough. And people respect truth. You know, the truth's always your friend. We've told that. Me and you've talked about that before. The truth is always your friend, no matter how it's received. Like, whatever is the result of you telling the truth is the best thing. Even if it's a challenging conversation, it's the best thing.
So interesting that we're going through this conversation, because earlier, about an hour ago, I got asked to talk to somebody who, you know, is a high-ranking member of a police agency. And, you know, he had to communicate in a way, well, first, I think he was a little hot to trot. And I said, like, first of all, if we're going to resolve this issue where you're saying that you have people in your staff, subordinates, that are not performing, you got to remove the emotion to start. Because you called me, like, literally 20 minutes ago, he said, well, 20 minutes ago, I got this thing, and now I got to do something about it. And I went, hold on.
Yeah.
You got to relax.
Yep.
All right. So
right.
Let's figure this out. You have a few people. We're not getting rid of a few people. We're going to figure out common grounds to meet on so everybody's happy.
Yep.
And one thing I told him, I said, people don't realize that once you essentially lose trust, even at a patrol level, and then you're starting to climb the ranks, you guys are all patrolmen together, but they can't trust you, don't feel like they can trust you, you're known as a snake, you know, whatever it may be. Then you're a sergeant, a lieutenant, a captain, a corporal, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And that's a very hard thing to get back, if you're even able to get it back ever.
Yeah.
Because your reputation is everything. I always tell people, if you're a backstabber once in your life, you're a backstabber for the rest of your life.
That's right. You're on that island forever. You're right. Yeah.
So with that being said, how do you think one builds trust going to the rank of a captain? And how do you think you've built trust? And do you think the trust exists for you?
Yeah. I mean, you know, first of all, like I start off this conversation, I start off any of these lineups I've been to by saying, look, y'all, I'm going to be real clear. I've never done this job. Like, let me start there. I've never been a captain of a division. Never. It's kind of like talking to when my wife and I first talked to our first child that became a teenager. We told her the same thing. We said, look, we've never parented teenagers. You've never been a teenager. Please don't think I'm saying I know what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm doing. And that's okay. Me as a captain. Yeah. It's also fine to say to these folks, look, I don't know exactly what I'm doing. However, I know how to police. I've done it assertively, aggressively, like productively, effectively for a long time. And I have a vision for how I want this division to be. To operate like how I want us to drive towards health and, you know, being professionals. So all that to say, like, we're going to learn together. I think if you come in here, you know, you come into this particular seat and you're, you know, impersonating somebody that knows everything and I've got all the answers, and that's just a disaster. That's ego. That's silly. That's in the way. But I've been clear. I've tried to be clear anyway, since day one, the last month or so in here, saying, look, y'all, this is a new thing, right? I'm going to make some errors, and that's okay too. I will tell you this, my mistakes will not be lazy or unprofessional. I can guarantee you that. They're more likely to be moving too quickly, moving too assertively, moving too aggressively, being, you know, too innovative. And that's okay too. Like, I'm telling y'all to make those same mistakes. I'm probably going to make those same mistakes too. But you know, I think when you lay out where your out of bounds is, you know, I've told them laziness and unprofessionalism is on the outside. Everything else is, if it's in good faith and pursuit of justice, you know, legal, righteous, we're going to be okay. Like, we're going to work through those problems. You're not going to get blasted for making mistakes like that. That's silly. And then, you know, you hold to that, you're okay. I think further, you know, working as hard or harder than your folks. And that doesn't mean like hours. You know, I'm a big believer, like, we're not paying you for the quantity of your work. We pay folks for the quality of your work. So yeah, I'm gonna be here early. I'm going to be in the gym. I'm going to be on some calls with you. I'm going to be in your lineups. You know, I'm going to work. I'm going to put as much effort in as you do it, at least. And so I think when folks see, you know, you send out emails and things that have all these grandiose ideas and, you know, the folks don't see your behavior lining up with your words, like, you're done. I mean, you're still in a position of positional authority, but as far as like motivating folks, being inspiring, having folks want to follow you and, you know, be in your vision, that's done. So, you know, I think just being honest and always, you know, having your actions and your livelihood line up with what you're saying out loud. I think that's the recipe. And, you know, and I'm coaching myself. I don't know that I necessarily always do that, but that's my aim. That's my advice. I think that's a healthy way to move forward.
What a reward system. Before I ask you about the reward system, for many years, I've worked under places that almost had no reward system. And then all of a sudden there was a reward system implemented, which was refreshing at that moment that some of us would start getting recognized for our efforts, which it seemed like for a while, the more you did, the less you got. The less you did, the more you got. And we thought for a second that would maybe a new shining light for us to have hope that something's going to change here. However, the first few awards that were given out were based on meritocracy. But one of the awards that was given out maybe a year or two later was based on nepotism. It was somebody's family member got it and did not deserve it.
Yep.
So they destroyed that fucking award system and made it. I literally took it off my wall. I had it on my wall at my house, took it off my wall and put it in a drawer. I almost threw it out.
For sure.
Because at that point, that was what I believed the value of that award was.
Yep.
When on top of somebody's son or daughter, I'm going to try to get it vague, got this crazy award in lieu of the hundreds of other people that worked there, knowing that this person had a year on the job and now is recognized as like the top of the agency, it wrecked it all. As a matter of fact, when I had gotten into it with a captain who worked there, who was literally exact opposite of everything you're talking about, just a horrible person, I said, you know, it's like, I think you feel like you think something's wrong here. I'm like, you know, and then at some point I'm like, how did that person get that award? Right. Answer me that. He's like, well, I don't know. That's what they sent me to do. I go, but your name's on the bottom of it. You signed it. Radio Patrol Division, your name's on it. It says Captain So-and-so. Okay. I go, you signed it. He goes, well, sometimes, you know, they told me I had to sign it. I go, so that just goes to show what you stand for to everybody else. Right. And you wonder why nobody talks to you.
Yeah.
You wonder why nobody talks to you. You try to come in here and chum it up. And behind the scenes, we all know what you're doing. We all know that you're a puppet boy. Right. And I'll never forget coming out. My friend who's a lieutenant is like, did you just say that to him for like 45 minutes? And I was like, dude, I had at it. Right. I just had it. Don't like come to me and say like, oh, you seem like you're upset. And I'm like, you think you seem like, and it wasn't even over that. That was just one of the points I was making. I'm like, but your name's on the bottom. You have no ownership. All you do, Captain, is you point fingers at everybody else, but you take no responsibility ever. Nobody's ever taught you how to lead. And I was like screaming for like 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Never forget my friend Chris. I come out and he was in the lieutenant's office, which isn't too far from the captain's office. And he's like, come in here, close the door. And I close the door. And he was like, yo, did you just say that to that guy? And I'm like, yeah. He's so, like, bro.
He said like, some things. It needs to be said sometimes. That's okay. You got to have
You know what? At that point, I was like, what else are you guys going to do here to everybody? Like, so what's the difference now? Nobody has anything to lose.
Right.
If you don't know anybody here, you're not getting anything. So what's the friggin' difference?
That's a good way to look at it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sometimes you got to be, you know, with the wolves, you can never be too severe. That's Martin Luther said that for sure. That's true.
But by the way, like, what do you do to let people know that you appreciate their work? How do you recognize them?
All right. So, and again, let me bound all this by saying, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I'll say that a lot. However, this is what I'm doing. Every single morning when I get in here, the first thing I do is fire up our report system where all the reports from the last day were written and approved up to my level. Right. And I go through everything that was written, you know, all the case reports, auto thefts, shootings, larcenies, drugs, that kind of thing. And I look for primarily right now, I look for anything that is not a call, but is self-initiated. So if I see, you know, somebody went out and stopped a car and seized a gun and took somebody to jail, like an illegal gun, or somebody went out here and saw a drug transaction or saw like, you know, a suspicious vehicle and initiated their own case and got some kind of dope or got a wanted person out of that. I look for those right out of the gate every morning. When I see one, I send an email directly to that officer. I CC their sergeant, their corporal, and my lieutenant. And the case number in the subject line and one line that, you know, something to the effect of man, that's solid. Excellent job. Keep it up. Keep your foot on the gas. That kind of proactive work is what keeps people safe. And I send that, and it takes 25 seconds, and I hit send. And so every morning I'll send 2 to 5, 6 of those sometimes on the, you know, on Mondays after the weekend, I'll send 10 or 15 of those. I've told my sergeants, you know, look, don't let, you know, we're bad about in the culture about, you know, discipline and, you know, righting the wrongs, but we're not the same. We're not equally, you know, we don't have equal fervor for recognizing good work. And so I've told them, look, I want to know if your guys spin up a good case, send me an email, send me and then the lieutenant an email with just the case number. Look, watch my guy's body cam. Watch how we work through this. Look at this case, read this case report. I've told them, you know, so you've got little incentives like that. I'll go into lineups and, you know, I'll know what squads is in lineup, and I'll go in with somebody in mind that worked a great case this week, and I'll call them out in lineup and, you know, give them a hand clap in front of everybody and just, you know, tell the whole squad what a badass job that was that this officer did. I mean, stuff like that, it's free. One of my good friends, Captain Anthony Price, him and I talk about it all the time. Stuff like that, we call it free morale. It's free. It literally costs nothing, but the benefit is a big deal. And it's just telling people that the work they're doing is great, because it is. You're not making up anything. You're just telling them, look, excellent job. And you do it in front of their peers. So you have, like, you know, I guess less conventional things like that, all the way up to like Officer of the Month nominations. We have Officer of the Month here every month in staff conference. The sergeants bring their nominations, and it's, you know, and it's sometimes it gets kind of contentious, the voting. And we have one Officer of the Month for every division, and quarterly our agency has a really nice luncheon at one of our convention centers here. The officer and a guest come, you know, they always serve, you know, great food. They read out their citation. They get a day off, like a day off from work for winning Officer of the Month. But I've told all the, you know, I've told the supervisors, don't come to the staff meeting without some nominations for Officer of the Month, because I see what your people are doing. If you come in here and you have no nomination, like I have 8 squads. I want 8 nominations at least. I want everybody to be putting up somebody for this, because your folks are doing great work. Don't let it go unnoticed. And fight for them. You know, come in here and pitch your case and try to get some alliances and get some votes and, you know, win your folks that award. I guess one of the final steps is, like, yearly we have our big Police Memorial Week awards, where, you know, guys and gals are awarded medals and bars and all of the jewelry for their uniform, life-saving, meritocracy, you know, unit citations, superior service, Purple Hearts, all that stuff. I've told our folks, like, I want our division to win more awards than any other division. Y'all should be writing up people, your folks, all year long. Like, make the awards committee, make it hard for them to not give us all of the awards. I want our people to be standing up front, doubled over from all the weight of the medals that they're winning, because they're doing great work. And again, that's effectively free morale too. I mean, that banquet stuff is paid for by donors and stuff. It doesn't cost much but your time. Just write it up and send it up. Take the time out of your day to write up those awards. I mean, it's amazing what a little chunk of metal to pin on your uniform does for a 23-year-old officer. If you think that young gal leaves that award and doesn't immediately go home and perfectly align that thing on their uniform and look in the mirror, and then they wear it to work shiny and new the next day, standing a little bit taller with their chest out, you're out of your mind. That's a big deal. Like, that's a big deal. And it took 5 minutes to write up the award nomination. But a lot of times you got whole squads that their folks aren't even getting these awards because the boss is not taking the time to write them up. And I think that's crazy. Folks will run through, you know, run through heaven and earth to win these kind of awards. So, you know, it's just recognizing good work. None of it's superfluous. None of it's made up. None of it is flattery. It's just recognizing good work. And then just look around. I just think it's, I don't know. I think that's elementary, but apparently that's difficult.
Hey guys, follow us on all social media platforms, to include Instagram, Twitter, Facebook group. We have so much information going on every single day, and we don't want you to miss out on any of that stuff. So check it out. Go give us a follow.
That was a rant.
It's okay. You're allowed to rant. That's what this podcast is about. As much as you're ranting, there are thousands and maybe even hundreds of thousands of people who are sitting here saying to themselves, yes, yes, exactly. This is exactly what I'm talking about. Like, right. You know, this is who I want to work for. But again, the goal of street cop training partial is to change the mindset of the existing.
Yeah.
But I'm really focused on developing the future.
Yeah.
So people can take this knowledge and now know how to lead better when they go, because they want to. I think everybody wants to serve for the most part.
Yep.
I think that there's a lot of things that happen in somebody's career where I think they lose sight of who they are from where they started. And I think it could be upper level pressure of like, yeah, you're one of us now. This is how it's going to go. You're going to follow what we say you're going to do.
Right.
I've seen it. I've seen good dudes feel pressure from the top or get dangled carrots and start playing a real dirty game for self-interest. And matter of fact, one of my tweets today had to do being self-interested. It said, I think it said something along the lines of like, not giving a F is not going to resolve anything.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. I mean, it sounds cool. Looks good on a t-shirt at the beach, I guess. But it's just not a, it's not a good plan for life. It's not, it's not a helpful plan for anybody. I mean, it's, and
for the world,
you know, you see the old, a lot of the stereotypical old cops in movies, like they're, you know, they're just dialing in. They're just on, got it on cruise control. They don't care about anybody except themselves. They're, you know, burnout and negative in the corner. Like, I mean, that's, I guess that's cool as a stereotype in NYPD Blue or whatever, but it's not helpful to the world. And further, I don't think it makes for a fun life or career. Like, why would you, resentment, that kind of thing is just, what, it doesn't serve a purpose. It's not a good plan. You know, I had an individual in another assignment that wanted to bend my ear on why, I'm gonna phrase this real precisely so I don't give them up, give this person up. Like why they were getting passed over for different assignments they were putting in for. Like they had been passed over for, wasn't promotions, it was just lateral moves. You know, no other division, no other team wanted this person in their perception. And so they had assembled a notebook. It was a pregnant notebook, big notebook, spiral bound notebook of like detailed, all of the intricate details of the assignments that they had tried to put in for over the past couple years, you know, and how in their estimation, they were much more qualified than everybody else. However, they got past it. And then this person said like, what do you think, what do I need to do? And I said, honestly, like, honestly, that book, that notebook is a, I mean, think about it. You are carrying around a physical representation of resentment. Like you made it and you're carrying it around and you're showing it to me. And my last piece of advice was this, look, metaphorically, if all of the girls don't want to go to the prom with you, it's not all the girls. You understand? Look at yourself. Like you got to start by looking at yourself, right? If the whole world you feel like is unfair to you, or is just doing you wrong, maybe like start by looking at yourself. That's the key. What can you change? Like, what have I built? What kind of person have I built myself into that teams don't want me? It's not all the teams. Perhaps it's me. I think that's always a good question is like, look at yourself, look in the mirror. But again, that's a challenging thing. You know, that's when everybody, if you're a sergeant and you have everybody wanting to transfer and leave your squad, it's not them. Maybe it's, how about it's what you've built, you know, start by looking there. And I think that's like, that takes a lot of courage to look at yourself with that kind of discerning eye, but it's the right thing. You know, look at yourself first. I think it's important.
I think it's very frightening when somebody can't look at themselves, or I don't know what the clinical diagnosis would be psychologically, but this is essentially my parents in the history of my life were the center of all the drama in my family, and even amongst their friends, everybody, they were, my parents were true troublemakers.
Wow. Yep.
And I try to explain it to these folks and I'm like, guys are the center of the universe of bullshit. Do you realize that? Like every problem we have in this fucking family and in your friend circles, it's you. You guys don't want to take any fucking accountability for it. I'm literally telling these, my, at the time, 60, 63, 65 year old parents, like,
yeah,
it's deplorable behavior. Do you guys understand that? Like I've been working years to get out of this. What the things you've done to me and the behavior that I've seen growing up, it takes a lot of time to correct it because I recognize how fucking awful it was.
Right.
And the problem that these two had was they would constantly enable each other. One person would say this, the next one would justify it. And this one would do that. And, this one would and you'd hear things like, well, you know, I mean, we're good people though. You know, and I'll give you an example. My parents are the type of person that if they did something for you, you owed them. And they held that over your fucking head forever.
Yeah.
No. If my father did anything for you, and you know, unfortunately, he's not able to comprehend this anymore, the condition he's in, and if he's got not a well man at this moment.
Right.
So I can say this, but you owed him. He had it in his head, like, and then he would be completely, it wouldn't be like, hey man, can you do me a favor? Like, hey, you owe me. Can you come do this for me? I did that for you.
That's tough. So like the world is a cosmic balance book. And you know, this group of people is in my debt and I'm in these people's debt and nobody's doing anything just out of kindness or love. That's tough, man.
You don't know. At least I was able to acknowledge how fucked up it was.
Right. Yep.
But
yep.
This is the upbringing that I came from. So you don't know any better about behavior. And I see a lot of that. I see a lot of people who their socioeconomic behavior, and there's different levels of thought as you progress in an economic scale. I'm just going to say that because I'm a business guy and I have now I have friends that are, Corey, I mean, like so wealthy that it's like what you think is wealthy, no fucking, not even close. And these guys, let me just into the defense, are fantastic human beings. They are really, but you know, so I think that we come from that mindset, and that's how you're raised and brought. You got to learn how to break that. And I'll say the same for the culture of a police agency. You've got to be able to break the mold. You don't have to be like everybody else,
right?
Yeah. You know. But anyway, that was just some food for thought there. Like,
yeah.
How screwed up we can be, and then how much I made an effort, probably my early 30s, to change who I was and behave more appropriately.
Yeah, and that was, you know, it sounds like that it's reprogramming is what that is. Because particularly with in a family, in a household, you get indoctrinated in, for good or bad, you know, and so you may have to unprogram, reprogram that. And so, you know, we were talking about this recently. I was talking to the police academy, talking to some of the young folks coming in, and I told them, look, you should have your eye on three people, in my opinion. And I heard this, I didn't make this up. I stole this from somebody. You should have your eye on somebody that is behind you in the game. So some, you know, 17-year-old, 18-year-old, that's an Eagle Scout and, you know, whatever is planning on getting into this career. I wish I'd have done it that way. That makes sense. You should have your eye on a peer of yours who is actually excelling beyond where you're at, right? A peer that's doing things more excellently than you, that you aspire to be like them. And then you should have your eye on somebody beyond yourself. So if you're, you know, if you're a new person in the academy, be looking at a training coach, be looking at a sergeant who is just killing the game. They're absolutely just top shelf professional cops. That's who I want to be like. So if you keep, you know, a couple of those levels of folks in proper perspective, it'll keep you on like on track. It'll keep you on target. Like I'm pursuing that guy or that gal. I have chosen, me and you've talked about this, who you choose to surround yourself with is some of the most important decisions you make in the whole world. So, you know, like my circle of friends at 46 years of age and after doing police work for almost 24 years, my circle of like friends is very small and I protect it like severely. I don't let a lot of folks into the circle of friends. I got a lot of acquaintances, but you know, the guys that we share a text thread, a text group together, we work out together, we eat together, our families hang out together. That group's small because there's not a lot of people that, you know, I want to pattern what I'm doing after, but there are a few and I want to keep them very close. And so, you know, who you choose to allow yourself to be influenced by is a big decision. And that's where a lot of people go in the ditch. They start, you know, following on folks, man. It's sad to watch.
It goes to show you, like, when that cancer exists in a organization.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I knew a guy that I used to work with. He was just everything you didn't want in a cop. But he was like in very impressionable on new guys. Yeah. He was a pathological liar. But the new guys thought he was fucking fantastic. Like they thought he was just like, they thought he was like the cool kid.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, no, there actually are cool kids here. You found the wrong one. You're trying to be like the wrong cool kid because he looks cool right now.
Right.
But that dude ain't the fucking cool guy here, bro.
No.
Like,
no.
Like there's 14 of us that are, we're the fucking cool kids.
That's right.
I promise you.
Yep.
And unfortunately, once it's hard to get them back. I would watch.
Yeah.
One thing that used to dishearten me is I'd watch all these fresh faces come in and then it just took one person who was miserable to scoop them up and put them on their team.
Yeah.
And now you had a guy who 5 fucking months ago was a hard charger, eager, came in with a like bright, energetic.
Yep.
And now he's like, you know, blowing jobs off.
Right. Yep.
Doing special checks all day. No traffic stops because he believed the fucking bullshit.
Yep.
He bought into it. And I hate, there's nothing that disheartens me more when people are like, it's not worth it, bro. Like fucking more work you do, the more trouble you're going to be. And like, I actually find that to be I will say this, maybe in some organizations, right. Sure.
Yeah.
But if you're in an organization where that's the culture, it's probably time to switch organizations.
Sure. And those are rare. That's not a lot of places. That's a very few places. It's probably you. Look at yourself. And if that's you everywhere, you know, whatever. Subway's hiring. Be a sandwich artist. I mean, everybody's hiring. There's 7 billion jobs in the world. There's got to be one you're going to like better. Go do it. It's fine. Sometimes it's addition by subtraction. Like you leave this agency, it may be a better thing for the agency. That's sad, but some people, yeah, that negativity like that is just got to go. And, you know, me and you've talked about this before too. Once young, impressionable officers attach themselves to those contagions, those, you know, cancerous negative folks, for whatever reasons, as humans, we're really good about getting together and we're really hesitant to separate, to break those right. things off. Yeah. And that's with a girlfriend, boyfriend, you know, dynamic. That's with a, you know, friend, peer. That's with a mentor, mentee. But it, you know, when you recognize that, you got to cut that, you know, sever the head of that and be done with that individual. Like you can't associate with that individual because they'll drag you in the ditch. It's not wise.
You know, the consequences are dire. And
yeah,
I would rather be, and I was not just the only one, but the oddball. Because I was living up to the standard and working to the standard that I set for myself. I didn't,
right?
But I also didn't cast judgment. I would even argue that in this profession, in some sense, if you're not going to be a hard charger, at least be a very professional cop and do the jobs that you get handed,
yep.
the calls for service you handed, to the best of your ability to do a nice job. Listen,
yeah.
I will tell you guys that I know that were some of the best cops in the world that weren't hard chargers, but they were fantastic fucking cops. I'm talking
yeah.
about
yeah.
really beautifully written reports,
yes.
thorough, very professional.
Yep.
They just didn't want to go out and crush the world, but
That's
they were
fine.
Always available. They were yep. always there to back you up. So we're going to have to write the paper on it.
That's right.
But they did their job very, very well. They never yes. turned their back on it. So listen, I get that hard chargers usually a little bit of a different breed, and it's not a dying breed. It's just a different breed.
Different breed, right.
I don't think it's any different, the statistics of or the percentages of who's a hard charger and who's not, than it was 25, 30, 40 years ago.
Yep, I agree. You
know, so yeah. I don't want people get into this idea, and I told this guy this too. I said, I don't think that every kid you get now is lazy. I think there's always been lazy people. I go,
right.
you just
yep.
think it because it's a quick excuse to go, oh, he's a millennial, he's lazy.
Yep.
I said, and the other thing is, you know, he got in the job in 05, this guy, I got in the job in 01.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, that time in our lives, we would listen because there was no options to not listen.
That's right.
and now there's recourse. People are not afraid to fight yep. back.
Yep.
You don't even have to get there, my man. You just need to sit down and reason with people. And all these guys that work for you that you have a problem with right now want to do is be treated like an adult like you.
Yep. That's it.
They just want the respect, like you're going to talk to them like you're a friend. And I said, so how do you fix this? It looks something like this. Look, boys, I'm going to do everything I can for you, but you got to work with me too. You know, I keep these guys off my back. And if you do, all you do is this, and then we're all good. And then when you come to me and say something, I can go back to them and go, hey, they do what you need.
That's
we
right.
need this, and I can work with you, but you got to work with me. And, you know, his first intuition was like to start barking out like threats. And I'm like, yeah, that's not going to work.
No.
Because now you're going to take your cop, bark threats at him. Now he fucking hates his job because he's getting threatened at work.
Yep.
Guess what he's doing to your public in the nice area that you guys work?
Right.
He's going to go out and be a fucking dick.
Yep.
Or he's not going to care. Or
right.
when I call, he's going to say, because you can get away with little its and bits of not giving a shit. Nobody will ever know.
Right. That's right.
Right. But
yep.
people do know when you actually give a shit. And
yep.
I, you know, I pride myself on some of the things where I went above and beyond. And I don't mean that in the sense of like to get the administration to recognize. I started just working for myself, Corey.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I never forget a dispatcher said to me one time, again, I don't mean to sound redundant, but these are the stories of my life. Somebody came to the window with a situation and I took an extra like 15 or 20 minutes to resolve it. I knew how to help them out. Was not my job to do it, but it was my job to do it. But typically 99.9% of the cops that I work with would have kicked it up to the detective bureau and been done with it.
Right.
And so I did it. I wrapped up the job. I handed it back to the guy through the window at headquarters. And a dispatch said to me, she goes, you know, I've been working here over 20 years.
Mm.
You're the first person I ever saw who did something like that for somebody.
How about
I go,
that?
Really?
Yeah.
And she said,
that?
Yeah, most guys would have, 20 years I'm watching these cops. And she goes, I got to tell you, that just, it was really nice to watch you do that for them. But
That's
even detectives, Corey,
yeah.
like I had detectives, well, my friends would tell me like, yeah, when your jobs come up, I love them. Like you got half the job done by the time
yeah.
it gets up here.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
You didn't give me three lines. You got numbers, phone numbers. You have everything tagged in evidence, where it's supposed to be, what you got. I don't have to go back out and do this stuff because I, but dude, I had a lot of pride in my job.
Yes. And that's the folks you're talking about. Like there's a, you know, the alpha, you know, meat eaters out here that are chasing guns and gangs, you know, that's a small minority of folks, but you know, you should aspire to be that officer that you were talking about that is reliable, fully competent, trustworthy. And, you know, again, not out here lighting the world on fire, but, you know, you never have to go behind them and check anything. Like if a supervisor says, hey, pal, handle this, that supervisor can forget it because that officer is so reliable that it's just good to go. I mean, I think that's a great goal starting out. And then, you know, if you go beyond that into a, you know, a cop and a crime fighter, that's a bonus. But yeah, if we all took that kind of level of commitment and professionalism to this job, if everybody was fully competent and trustworthy, all of our problems truly would be outside. I mean, with crime and the outside world, not internal. And that's it. I think that's a beautiful fantasy. You know,
I also want to jump in and say that, like, let me be very clear, everybody. I fucked a lot of stuff up when I was new. I did not act appropriately. I had to learn because nobody ever taught me. And that's kind of what this company stands for, is like, hey, I'm having this conversation. You know, some of the most proud moments of my career are not the ones you think they are. And I can tell you one, and it's one where I went to a first aid call. Old man, they were working on the grandfather, this little boy who's playing. I mean, every first responder was running in past this kid who was playing with like toy trucks on the floor.
Yeah.
And I wasn't even a dad then. So I'm like, I was crappy with kids. Now I'm like literally fucking Peter Pan. I went from acting like I was 21 at 30 to acting like I'm 11 at 41 going on 42.
Right.
Boy, you're talking to an 11-year-old.
I like that.
Well, so I recognize they didn't need me anymore. So much more trained personnel showed up, paramedics and things of that sort. So whatever they were working on this guy for. And I sat down and started playing with the kid. Now I could have just went back in service, went back on the road, but I recognized in a moment, I don't know what caused it. I was like, oh, let me sit down and play with this kid. So I sat and played with him for like 10 minutes. We were playing trucks and rolling it around. And once they got it, I wanted to distract him while they were taking the old man out on the gurney.
Yep.
I didn't know what kind of relationship had his grandfather, but I'm sure he was probably four or five or six years old.
Yeah, it's traumatic.
Probably a devastating thing. So I just wanted to distract him a little bit and keep him entertained. And once he was gone, it was all cleaned up. And I said to his family, I said, all right, you know, have a good one. So like 3 weeks later, it could have been 3 weeks, but a lot later, a woman comes up to me at a drinking establishment when I was a party boy back then.
Yep.
She goes, hey, are you a so-and-so cop? I don't want to say the town. And I said, no, I'm not. You probably have a mistake with somebody. And she's like, no, you are. And I'm like, no, I have a brother who looks just like me. It's not me.
Yep.
So she said, no, you are. She goes, and, you know, my father has since then passed, but he lives for a few weeks. It was a house over here on Brown Avenue.
Oh, wow.
And I said, she goes, yeah. She goes, you know, I just want to say, like, I can't tell you what it meant to me for you to sit with my son and just spend time with him while all this stuff was going on.
About that. Yep.
And she's like, I'd like to buy you a drink if that's okay. I went, nah, you don't have to. You know, it's not that big of a deal. It's what I just goes to, but you don't understand like what it meant to us as a family for you to do that.
No.
And so I thought to myself, how would I feel if somebody did that for my family as a police officer? Like, what
that's
is that? What is
that gonna get? But you never know that kind of impact. And again, you said it, that was 8 minutes out of your life, but for the kid, for sure. And for her to see that, it gave some stability. It restored some kind of normalcy. And she remembers that to this day. It's probably 2% more effort to be exemplary in this profession than mediocre. It probably is. I mean, that's 2% more effort, but it's you looking around saying what needs to be done. Oh, there's a kid. His whole world just got flipped upside down with the nuclear bomb of his granddad dying, perhaps. I'm going to hang out with him. Like just noticing that and then doing like 2% more, just hanging out with him for a few minutes. It's a big deal. That's what we're talking about here, being professional. I love that, man. That's a great story.
Uncomfortable to do those things at times because they seem a little awkward, but my suggestion is go ahead and do them. Go ahead and do that extra. Bro, I'm telling you, you want to hear something crazy? I got in trouble. I had a guy after me at the top, this fucking jerk off. And we had a smoke condition. Listen to this. This is going to make you nuts. This is kind of shit that I deal with. Shit caught on fire at a house. It was like 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah,
maybe five. So the shift was ended. I was working midnight. So I didn't work midnights for very long. I worked midnights for like 9 months. But I was on the job for a while. I switched squads for a reason. And I went to midnights on this squad, you know, for various numbers of reasons. and it was freezing. I mean, it was like literally 0 degrees. The wind was blowing, and now they're evacuating an apartment complex. Right. So now we got people coming out 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and it's freezing. Now I'm trying to put people in police cars, but I'm running out of police cars.
Yep.
So I start calling for ambulances. Do me a favor. How many squads they got? Where it's 4 or 5 in the morning. There's nothing else going on.
Yeah.
Send every bus we got over here, right, and let's get these people keep them warm in these ambulances while the firemen work on their on the thing. That was the call that I made.
Yeah.
Put an old man in the front seat of our unmarked car that I was driving. I actually sat in the back while he was in the front. We had 2-man units.
Yeah.
Like I just hung out in the back in the cage while he sat. This old like 80-year-old man. He pissed the front seat.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So then I'm like, all right, well, I'm not getting back in the front seat. You got to drive right, me back. This is the first time somebody pissed, like an old person pissed. Anyway, the next day I'm thinking like, wow, what a great thing that I did. Like people were just so thankful. Like it was like, yeah, thank you for getting all this stuff for us. It was so cold out here. Yeah. Like, nobody was doing anything. And I'm like, let's get these people warm. It's fuck. Could you imagine being them right now? We just did everything we could as first responders to make sure that they were comfortable where there was a real working fire. It wasn't crazy. They put it out. We had nowhere to put them. So the next day I come in and I'm told the top is looking to do me on this. Yeah, real, no bullshit.
What do you mean?
And literally people heard about this because they just had this one dude had a vendetta. He's like the worst human being on earth. Hmm. And he's got a vendetta after me. So now you got guys going upstairs to defend me.
Sure. Yeah.
And like you got like command staff. Like, what are you doing? What this guy did? Like, he's like, well, he should have brought them to other apartments that were in the area. He could open the vestibules and I'm standing there. He's like, I don't know why we're voicing. Yeah. So like, dude, that's the kind of shit that we were dealing with.
Yeah.
And like, because I had to like let the guy who takes care of the cars know, car 103, the guy pissed in the front seat. You got to clean it.
Yeah.
He's like, now that guy don't give a shit.
Right.
Gets back to this jerk off. What do you mean? Why was there a guy in the front seat of the car? And now came to say, why was there a guy in the front seat? So this is the shit that people have to deal with when you're trying to do this job appropriately.
Yeah.
And that's when you like the frustration and then the nepotism of like, I'm trying to do the right thing. And then they're asking supervisors like, well, how come there wasn't a sergeant out there? And the sergeant's like, it's 5 o'clock in the morning. We leave an hour early. 4 to 45, we're in here doing reports.
Yeah.
He's the senior patrol guy. He's technically in charge out there. Right. He's the most capable guy we have here.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? Like,
and you solved the problem. Like, yeah, you solved the problem. That was the goal.
But dude, I could not believe that people were like literally getting so frustrated. They were just going to that office and like talking to this dude. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, good.
And then a friend of mine from internal affairs is like, hey man, they're coming in here looking at your shit every day. They walk in here looking for you. And I go, on what? They go, we don't know. We can't figure out what this guy's problem is with you.
What a waste of energy. I mean, think about what you could do with all that energy. It's something useful. But unfortunately, I hate, there's nothing worse than hearing stories like those. But I know that happens. That's sad, isn't it? Yeah, it's silly. It's just silly. People like that are silly people.
Oh, well, listen, and you know, unfortunately, the world is no shortage of them, but there's also wonderful people in the world. And to be honest with you, I think about how that made me feel. Maybe in some hindsight 2020, it makes me the boss that I am today, or at least the boss I try to be today.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Yeah. You can learn. That's the best thing. You can learn, you know, the second best thing to knowing what to do is knowing what not to do. So therefore, you can learn as much from poor leaders as you can from great leaders. I mean, you know, that guy, I'm not going to be like that. How about that? His whole life represents, I'm not going to be like that. And that's a good lesson for me. I'll take it. You know,
I wonder how somebody sits and is okay with that kind of behavior. I always think about that. I'm like, how are you okay with yourself?
Right.
Like knowing that you're such a bad person, like, you know, you are.
And you know, I always go backwards to think, you know, think about a whatever 6-year-old, in this case, boy, young man, 7-year-old, 9-year-old young man. And he thinks, I want to be a cop, because a lot of kids think that. At no point does that 7-year-old think, I want to be a police commander who focuses on the minor things and hammers people for making good-hearted. Like, I want to do that. Like, nobody thinks that. So, but at some point, you become that person. I would love to understand how that shift works, because we need to do away with that in all of humanity. But nobody ever aspires to that kind of becoming that kind of person. It's so sad to watch.
You know, the best thing about all this is all of it's fixable.
Yeah.
But we know what the consequences are of not caring and having self-interest, and we're living in it now.
Now
everybody who's coming up in the next profession, you know, before, like, these academies, like, okay, we said we did something. There was no accountability. Just go out. We can always just fall back on that. They went to an academy. And now it's like, well, no, what the world expects is a professional, but there haven't been that many. that have been in the position to design a program to ensure that the world is getting professionals.
No, you're right.
And so we are paying consequences of our previous generations for what they just didn't care about. And now we're trying to play the catch-up game.
Yeah.
And, you know, now it's a war. Right. And unfortunately, there's not many guys willing and ready to take on the challenge. And, dude, I mean, I pay significant consequences. I mean, there's some certainly great rewards, but, I mean, I pay some significant consequences for trying to help fix this thing. It's wild.
Yeah. And it's always it's always more costly and more dangerous to retake, you know, the ground that you've voluntarily surrendered than it is to just maintain the line. You know, if you let the standard slip and then, you know, tightening it up is always more painful. It's always more challenging than just maintaining the professional standard, which is optimal. That should be the goal.
I think because people know they're going to come and go. They have a short duration in a profession or in a position. And then they don't give a shit about what's beyond them. It's about what can I get now? What can I do for myself? Does this, I'll do this. This is good enough.
Right.
And that's problem. One of the most significant problems here is we've always said that that's good enough.
Yeah, no, you're right.
It's not. It's not. It's just not. It can't be. It's unfortunate. Think about how many lives have been lost and people just completely write that off on the fact that we have disregarded or used the word good enough or we checked the box.
No, you're
right. People die because of people's own self-interest and it's fucking deplorable.
No,
and it's happening. Dude, I mean, it's happening here in the state of New Jersey. It's so fucking sad. I'm not saying at the local level from our government is on an agenda driven to try to get votes thing. It's just, and it's so cockamamie. It's just turning the wheels completely in reverse of some of the progress we've made.
Yep.
And they just don't care. That's what drives me the most. If it was good and I was the fucking bad guy, I'd be like, you know what? You're right. This is better. Let me step aside. It's just their gut. This thing was moving forward and now we're yanking it, throwing it in reverse, blowing gears out and driving it backwards again. And the consequences are dire. Why you not care about these people's lives? Because you're so self-interested in what you can get for you.
Yeah. And
that's the most fucked up thing.
No, you're right. And we should constantly be, you know, chasing the better, right? There's no place that's perfect. There's no place that's totally dysfunctional, but there's always a progression. I got a good friend, Lieutenant Jamin Martinez in Sacramento County, and he gave me a challenge coin years ago, and I never forget it. The quote, I guess it was a quote from his sheriff. It said something like, "There's no best, there's only better," and I remember that. Like that stuck with me intently, and I remember thinking, you know, that's a really good vision. You're never going to arrive at perfection. You know, we don't have anything else we can work on, but every day there should be better, you know, moving along the progression. I think that's a great goal for yourself as an individual and then for your agency on the whole. There's no best, there's only better. I think that's a good vision.
Guess we just try to figure it out every day, right?
Yeah, who knows? Yeah. I started by saying, and I'll end by saying, I don't know. So there you go. We're all working as best we can. That's the goal.
Yeah. And I know that people appreciate the work that all of us are doing. And Corey, even taking your time, this is what, the third or fourth time you're, I know third for sure. Was it the fourth time or the third time?
It may be the fourth time. Yeah. This has been great. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, dude, you know, you're one of very few recurring people on the show. And it really, we do get to some good points. And the work that we're putting in here is important. And nobody's paid for this.
No.
It's just that we would like to see things get better. We'd like to see a lot of lives affected. And you don't realize what the trickling down effect is. We can affect the cops. They can affect society. You know, we have a safer society. We have less victims. And we have, you know, Christ. I mean, at a minimum, let's put it at like less lives lost.
Right.
And even one up on that to police suicide.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And again, you have a vision like that. You have a goal. Like we at least know what direction we should be going in. And I think, you know, proper leaders are casting that vision and getting folks on board. I think I hold up my end of the ship. You hold up your end of the ship. And we trust everybody else that are, you know, in that same mindset to do the same. That's how you keep the nation whole, honestly.
It's the ones who care versus the ones who don't.
Right.
It's like, that's the war.
Yep.
It's the ones who care and the ones who don't. And it's a very, very, it's a lot of friction. And we're always glad to get a real strong knight on our side.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, so anyway, hey, listen, this has been great, brother.
All right. I got to throw shout out to Police District 2 in Greensboro, the South Side. That's my new home and I'm proud of these folks. So I had to throw that in at the end there. Appreciate it.
How many more years are you going to do?
I got four until I'm done. So which will go fast because they've gone fast so far. Yeah.
You're going to call it in four?
Yeah, that's the goal. Yep. Unless something changes.
How do people apply to Greensboro to be a cop there?
GPDcareers.com. That's it. You go to that website, it's everything. Frequently asked questions, videos, all the way to applying. We just got our chief just succeeded in getting us a 15% raise starting and all the way across the board. Fully paid police academy. If you're in North Carolina, this is the place to be, period.
It's awesome.
There you go.
All right, brother. It's great seeing you again.
Thanks, man. See you, bud.
Hey guys, check out our upcoming training at streetcop.com. Don't forget, we have 50 instructors nationally teaching a variety of topics. These are the best classes you're going to experience in your career. We make sure of it. You're going to love it. I guarantee you, you're going to be thankful that you went. Check us out at streetcop.com for all upcoming classes in your area.